The San Francisco Peaks in northern Arizona are among the more attractive places for hikers to venture in the state, and a cornucopia of plant species and natural growth for botanists to explore. In fact, more than 800 plant species can be found there. In the August issue of Arizona Highways magazine, the story called Where the Wild Orchid Grows by Annette McGivney digs into a number of those species as she hikes with botanist Glenn Rink, and the two of them join me. Now, Glenn, Annette calls you a guerrilla botanist in the very first line of the story. What do you make of that description, and how would you define it?
Well, people have brought that up to me in the last couple of weeks, and I think she's referring to the fact that I'm going to places that most other botanists don't want to go to. So that's deep, wet canyons, cold places, brushy places, steep, nasty things that most people that live in cities would never consider going to, usually without any trails.
But has that allowed you to make some really fascinating discoveries because you've gone to places other people won't?
Absolutely. It's allowed me to carve a niche for myself in the botanical research world.
So, Annette, from hanging out with Glenn for the amount of time that you did, how much do you feel like you learned exponentially about what it takes to find these sometimes elusive plants?
I learned a lot. I learned a lot about how to recognize plants from their flowers and from their leaves and kind of, you know, getting into the details of the characteristics of the plants and watching Glenn collect plants in the field and press them and seeing how not only was he, you know, just looking at the leaves, but he was actually like looking at the roots and kind of looking at the plant as a whole organism and all the different parts of it made me appreciate kind of the level of detail you need to have in order to properly identify plants.
Generally, could you describe what the plant life on the San Francisco Peaks is like?
It's pretty unique. There's five species of sedge that grow on the San Francisco Peaks that don't grow anywhere else in the state. These are things that are coming down from the Rocky Mountains. So in some senses, the San Francisco Peaks are a southern extension of the Rocky Mountains. People do get up on the peaks quite a bit. It's not snow-covered throughout the year. There's always something new to discover, despite the fact that people are all over the place up there. It's not to say that you can't take a hike up on the peaks kind of off-trail, and you're not going to run into anybody. But there's always something new to discover. On this trip with Annette, there was a young man along who was not a botanist, and we stopped at a pond early in the day, and he noticed a plant that I'd never noticed before. And so different sets of eyes are really valuable.
Going off what Glenn said, that the peaks are such a unique environment. You know, we have like this alpine ecosystem here in Arizona, and with it comes so many unique plants. And that was sort of my motivation with the story, was knowing that it was a unique ecosystem. But obviously, I didn't have the scientific expertise to appreciate, you know, how that manifested in the vegetation. And so getting to go hiking with Glenn was such an amazing experience for me.
And Annette, not only do you get into the ecosystem, you write so much about how important that area is to so many Native Americans as well, and the different uses for the plants. Could you describe some of those? Because there is a fascinating connection that some of the people you spoke with have to what is grown on the peaks.
Some of the rare plants have medicinal uses to the indigenous people of northern Arizona, but also some of the very common plants like yarrow and other things that, you know, that we see, but we, you know, in non-native culture aren't aware of all the different medicinal and ceremonial uses, like wild tobacco being gathered, harvested from the peaks and taken to the Hopi mesas for ceremonies. We sometimes look at plants more from a scientific perspective, but the indigenous cultures actually view the plants more as part of their cultural identity. That's, you know, very much a part of them and their history. So those plants are very much a part of their tradition, even for tribes that aren't located right at the peaks, but they come to the peaks to gather the plants.
Guys, let's talk a little bit about the graceful buttercup and the hunt for it. And there's one line in your story, Annette, where it says, "The graceful buttercup is stealthy. Its growing season is short, and it blooms during the peak of the monsoon when hiking up to the plant's possible hiding places is treacherous due to lightning danger."
Oh, well, so the graceful buttercup, I was just originally drawn to it because of its name. And for me, these little plants that before I investigated this story, you know, I would see these delicate little flowers high up on the peaks, poking through the rocks. And I would kind of admire their tenacity and their beauty in a very delicate and harsh environment. And so the graceful buttercup really captured my imagination, if only because of its name. And so it kind of gave me something to focus on as far as I really want to try and find this plant, but it's hard and you've got to know where to look. And it really helps if you have someone who's able to recognize its tiny little green leaves, especially if it's past the flowering stage. It's almost impossible for a novice, I would say, to recognize it, you know, when it doesn't have the flower, because it's so complicated to and easy to confuse it with other plants that are similar. So I was sort of focused on the graceful buttercup. Glenn, maybe not so much, because he doesn't really focus on common names at all. I learned with plants, he is more interested in uses the scientific names like any scientist would.
Glenn, forgive me for not using the scientific name, but another one that you and Annette came across was the Franciscan bluebell, which Annette, in your story, you described that it tastes like spinach. And Glenn, apparently you just grabbed some and you started eating it and then offered it to Annette. How did that go?
The bluebells doesn't really smell, and it tastes about like spinach. And we did eat some while we were up there.
Well, that's what I thought was great, too, and obviously having someone with your knowledge there. But I was thinking to myself, even I would really have to trust Glenn and Annette on this one to say, yeah, it tastes like spinach. Yeah, well, sure it does. Why not? Right, have some. But did you trust him right away to try that?
I did. I have heard about Glenn. He's kind of a legend, at least in northern Arizona, for his knowledge of plants and his determination to hike into crazy places to find them. And so I definitely trusted him on different levels, and I knew he had the experience that if he was going to put something in his mouth and eat it, I was safe to eat it too. I'm not a big edible kind of person on my hiking because I'm afraid of eating the wrong thing, but I knew with Glenn that I was safe, and it did taste like spinach.
Annette McGivney is a writer for Arizona Highways, and Glenn Rink is a botanist. We've been talking about Annette's article called Where the Wild Orchid Grows.